Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
But he could, if he's tapping it from Moradin as opposed to doing it himself.
I think Samael was pretty buff.
I haven't really thought about that part of it, but I guess that would probably be true. I mean, that would be the most dramatic, to have them not fighting side by side, but instead of having two separate areas.
Rand has people around him that are really good generals. Matt is a good general. Ruark is, you know, really commands the IO really well.
I think so. I do think that Lon will survive the last battle.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode 12B. We're going to talk about more prophecies and other semi-prophecies, maybe a little dreams this week.
Hello everyone, this is the Wheel of Time fantasy series, with books, the first 11 of already being written, and book 12, the final one, is being worked on. Also with us is Carrie.
Hey everybody, we're going to start this week off with the Ilfing questions and answers. So just to remind everybody what happened. The red twisted doorway in the Stone of Tyr, it leads to the land of the Elfin, who give truthful answers to three questions. We know that Matt and Rand and Moraine went through the doorway. Matt and Rand, we know what they asked, but we don't know anything about Moraine yet. Also, I would like to say that we may have spoilers, because you never know, we could be talking about anything. So, spoiler warning starts here. First off, when Rand went in, he asked, should I go home to my people? And they answered, you must go
actually,
to
Actually, Matt, wasn't it? I think that was that Matt's question.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was, I was thinking about when Rand went, but that was Matt.
That's all good.
Sorry. That's why he asked
Matt's
if he should go.
Sort of all go together, actually. Is three questions. Should I go home to my people? The answer, you must go to Rudion. Why should I go? If you do not go to Rudion, you will die. Why? You will have sidestepped the thread of fate, left your fate to drift on the winds of time, and you will be killed by those who do not want that fate fulfilled. So that sort of all three combined to a pretty interesting tone set for Matt, which is not one that he really likes.
No, Matt always, he doesn't like, he never likes getting clamped down, and that's kind of exactly what those answers are doing. That's why he doesn't like it that much.
He just wants to go against whatever he's told.
And that basically is saying, well, you can't, you have to follow your fate or you'll be killed,
you'll
basically.
Die, yeah.
You'll die if you don't follow your fate.
Which he always gets pulled that way anyway, it seems.
Mm-hmm. After those questions, he also asks another. He demands to know his fate, and what the Elfins say. And this is a quote: "To marry the daughter of the Nine Moons! ! To die and live again and live once more, part of what was. To give up half the light of the world to save the world. Go to Rudaean, son of battles. Go to Rudaean, trickster. Go, gambler. Go." The part that I want to focus on is in this quote is. What we're going to talk about in a little bit, but to give up half the light of the world to save the world. Again, it's referring to possibly Matt losing half of his eyesight. What do you think?
Yeah,
do you
think
that's what it means?
It's an interesting thing, because that's one sort of ties in with the vision that Min had, talking about his eye on a balance scale. And so that sort of ties in a bit with that. We're not going to talk about Min's viewings, but the thing that I see definitely there is personal sacrifice. Just like Rand, Matt's got, you know, the fate of one who has to personally sacrifice something in order to give the greater good of the world. So, once again, this is not something he's looking forward to, but he seems to be sort of resigned to it, and he seems to be willing to go along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the same. He's he'll push and pull and do whatever he can to maybe try and change things, but in the end, he always gives in and does maybe what you would expect that was supposed to be done before. I think that it was a dream, wasn't it? The balance scale thing? His eye on the balance scale?
Yeah, it was both, yeah. A dream and
did they both
viewing,
have
so
it?
It's actually referenced three times. Yeah, they both did.
Yeah. So it does... It's interesting. I thought that maybe he would lose one eye, and I could see him walking around with a patch. But I don't know. Do you guys think it could possibly mean something else, or just?
I don't know. I think Robert Jordan's kept it vague enough that that it's tough to figure out. I honestly don't really know, but I think whatever it is, I'm going to enjoy reading about it because I always enjoy Matt's. It sounds weird, but I enjoy Matt's suffering. If that's maybe, but he always makes it entertaining suffering. So yeah.
Yeah. Very true.
Also, we know of some. We know vaguely a little bit about what Brand asked and the answers that he got. So, one of the questions that we know that he asked was he did ask how to cleanse Sidene. The answer that he received is stated sound principles in both high philosophy and natural philosophy. So he's just basically talking about it, saying that they really just told me a bunch of crap. But I think the most important thing is that he asked how to cleanse Sidene, which is a reference to later in the books when he actually ends up doing that very thing.
Mm-hmm.
He also asks, how can I win the last battle and survive? This is a quote that a lot of people talk about as far as prophecies and foreshadowing as to what's going to happen in the last book. And the quote is, the north and east must be as one. The west and south must be as one. The two must be as one. If you would live,
you must die. A lot of very
contradictory
terms there.
Yeah, and he really thinks he has it figured out, but
I think he's wrong myself.
I don't have like a complete theory or something. I don't think that's what it is at all. Like, I think he's looking at it in a wrong terms. Maybe it's not the land as in west and south, all that east and north. I think it's maybe like the Black Tower and the White Tower have to be united before they can win the battle, the last battle. And I don't know, maybe it has to do with the lands, but I think it more has to be that the whole Black Tower minus the Dark Friends and the White Tower minus the Dark Friends have to be joined, and they have to be complete in themselves. Like, the White Tower can't be separated and going on with their little skirmishes. They have to be fully united and then unite together, which we've already seen that they're already starting to unite because there's Aes Sedai taking Ashaman warders and vice versa. So that's what I think, but I don't think what he thinks is, no matter what, even if I'm wrong, I don't think that he's right with what he thinks.
What about if you would live, you must die? A lot of people think that's a reference to him faking his death.
Yeah.
Which I don't believe it is.
No,
I kind of think he's meaning if you would live, if you would have, if you would see your children, if you would see the world go on, you have to die.
Yeah.
I think he's going to live through the end, so I can't see that.
This is where, of course, a lot of the speculation of him and his relationship with Luz Theron coming in, and I haven't been able to or seen anybody else articulate fully a really good theory on what the relationship between Rand and Luz Theron is, and you know, haven't heard a good theory on how, you know, they can fuse together, lose there and die, and Rand live. But those are a lot of the general concepts that are communicated through this prophecy, and that's sort of what I think is going to happen. I actually disagree a little bit with you, Carrie. I think that he actually does have the right idea about the north and east must being one, and I think that's the part that puzzles him, is, you know, he's got the north and east must be one, because he was already wrong about that at once. You know, he forgot about the Shan Chan. It said in Knife of Dreams how he thought that meant he had to unite everybody, but he realizes now he has to be one with the Shan Chan, which he doesn't like, but he'll have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And he was already wrong about that one, and so I think he has an idea, kind of like he did about the north and the west and all that stuff being as one. I think he has an idea of what he has to do to live, to die, and all that, but I don't think that he has the right idea. Just an impression I get of the way he relates to Min, as if he, like, thinks that he's, you know, going to have to leave her. And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to you know, really explain very well, but I think he has just a sense of knowing in him that... he thinks he knows what's going to happen, but I think he's going to be surprised, because
yeah.
RJ's good at that.
Yeah. I think he's going to live, and I always took it as meaning that, which I'm sure I've said before, that he's kind of, everybody's going to believe he's going to die, but really he's not. So maybe he's faking his own death or something like that. And I don't think that it has anything to do with Louis Theron, because it says, if you would live, and I don't see them, I know they're sharing the same mind and they talk together, but I still don't see, Rand is still Rand. And so I still see that as meaning him only, not
That's true.
The other entities inside his mind. I think it's just him. For him to live, he must die. So I think it's some kind of play on words, and maybe he'll just, I don't know, the whole thing with, and I always forget her name.
Duan?
With Sean Chan. No. I remember her. With Nynaeve and them, and she's supposed to help Rand to die, I think maybe she's going to help him in a way that he wants, where he can somehow fake his own death, or maybe he can die and everybody thinks he's dead, but they can bring him right back to life. Maybe she will learn how to do that, even though they say it can't be done. Maybe she will be the one to be able to bring people back.
That actually is, I really like that theory, because Robert Jordan likes to find the impossible to, you know.
Yeah. Stilling. Oh, it can't be done. It can't be done. But, yeah. Well, you can't heal Stilling, but it happened. Done, so.
Yeah, and you can't heal the taint, but he did it.
But it, yeah, that's good. Exactly.
The third question that Rand asks, we don't really know anything about, only that they don't mention Rudaean to him. So if we move on now, we're going to talk about some of Egwene's dreams. The first one, which I think is a pretty obvious one and a clue, a very big clue to the last battle, is she dreams of Perrin with a beard leading a huge pack of wolves that stretched as far as the eye can see. I'm really excited about this because I'd love to see Perrin leading an army of wolves. What do you think?
I completely agree. That would be so cool. I've forgotten about that one, but to just see, to hear the descriptions of how, you know, him going in there and tearing up, you know, I love Perrin's battle scenes because it's kind of grim and pretty raw, and to see Perrin leading an army of wolves into some Trollocs or something, that would be awesome. Or even to attack the Neverborn, as they call them, the Fades. But that would be mm-hmm. way cool. I hope it happens.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you guys. I can't see it meaning. Obviously, that's what it's about, and it'll be cool because as far as the eye could see, yeah, those wolves are gonna be doing a lot.
Yeah, the question then becomes: how does he get away from the Two Rivers people? Who's gonna take over them? My answer would probably be Tam, considering he's got military experience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that he's gonna have to get away from them and away from Fael, which is a task.
That's true, because I guess it just says Perrin. It doesn't say that Fael or anybody else is with him. I never thought of it as him being alone, even though that's what it says, but oh, he might have to knock her out. I don't know.
he's going to have to have saved his life or something beforehand in order to let him go, or something big.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, the next one we'll move on is the dream that Egwene had of Elaine forcing Rand to his knees with one hand, and I know a lot of people who think Rand is too arrogant will like this one, but what do you guys think of that?
That's a hard one.
Elaine forcing Rand to his knees with one hand. Maybe we've already seen this. I mean, Rand doesn't interfere with Elaine right now in the last two books with anything that Elaine's been doing, and I think everyone knows that Rand wants to. He is kind of on his knees. He won't help her because he knows if he does, he's going to be in trouble. So I don't know. I think kind of he is on his knees because he won't help her. I mean, he really feels tied down that he can't do anything.
Yeah, this That's is an idea. I had just thought of this. I'm not sure. Do you guys remember whenever Rand was bonded by Elaine? Was he on his knees?
I don't know if he.
Yeah, he might have been.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
but would she have to force him?
Well, I'm sure
no. Well, maybe.
Yeah, I guess it's really forcing, but yeah, I don't really remember. But I think if nothing else, the intent is clear that he is not lording over her. In fact, it could almost be construed the opposite, although I wouldn't go that far. But she's certainly independent of his influence.
Definitely, because if it was any other ruler in Andor, if Eileen wasn't the one, then you know that Rand would be right in there.
Yeah,
you know, doing everything he could to help, but she doesn't want him there. She wants to do it on her own, which is great, but I don't think that he would let that go for anybody else, so it could certainly...
Yeah. Well, it's actually good, because the people of Andor, she knows her people, and they wouldn't accept it any other way.
No. No. The next one is one that I like, too, which is Loghain, laughing, steps over something onto black stone. It looks like Rand's body, but when she touches his face, it breaks
this
like...
This one's pretty baffling, I'll be honest. Loghain stepping over Rand to do something, I think this is, obviously, Loghain is... The first thing you think of Loghain is the glory that surrounds him from Min's viewing, and stepping over Rand would certainly give you a lot of glory. I'm going to point to my own theory here as to where Loghain gets his glory. I think his glory is coming from doing something, some governing after the final battle. So stepping over Rand, you know, it could be, Rand was in charge here, but I'm taking charge here, and I know it doesn't seem that he would be laughing whenever he does this, because he seems like a pretty solemn guy whenever it comes to that, but... I still think he's going to be stepping over Rand, taking over the reins of the governance of the world, and that's where he's going to be getting his glory. Touching his face and having it shatter like paper, I think could be just symbolic of Rand and his downfall, that he's not going to be governing the world after the last battle.
What do you think the black stone could represent? Him stepping over onto
a
black
stone?
That's
a good question. I actually hadn't considered that. I'm not really sure what the black stone could be. It could just be could be the Black Tower. Yeah, could be Shale Ghul. I associate Shale Ghul with dark black rocks and, you know, really not a place with sand and sunshine. But
when you say that, maybe it's when I first read this, the first thing that came to my mind is that during the last battle. Rand does the legwork, and he does what needs to be done as far as entombing the Dark One again, but he doesn't do it completely. He's on the ground almost dead, and Loghain, actually, who seems to have a good head on his shoulders, maybe he really doesn't. Maybe he's just looking for a way to get in, and he's the one that actually steps over Rand's body and actually finalizes it, and he's the one that gets the glory for actually doing it, for actually entombing the Dark One again. That's what I thought when I first... read it, and then I thought, oh, no, that's probably just crazy, but it would make sense if that's the way that it happens.
He'd be laughing while he did it. Well, I guess he could be mad, but, yeah.
I always thought that one ties in with what I was saying before about Rand faking his own death or whatever. I always thought that it would be something was set up where the world would think Rand was dead, and Loghain... maybe he's laughing because he's trying to get the trust of the Black Tower, like all of Taim's men as well. And so when I think of him stepping on the Black Stone, that he is stepping up in the Black Tower and going to be taking over. So he's stepping over Rand's body. And then I always figured that his face breaks like a paper puppet because it's not really Rand dead. The whole thing was just... It's fake. It's a puppet. It's not real.
Yeah, that makes
it real. There's a few little things that kind of all lead me to that little theory. So,
as far as the next dream references a little bit of something from Min's previous vision of having the Rand. Excuse me, not Rand, because she doesn't specifically say Rand, but the three women standing around the funeral bier. The prophecy reads, or her dream reads, that Elaine and Min and Avienda sitting in a silent circle around him, which is referencing Rand, each in turn reaching out to lay a hand on him. Do you think, there's two different ways to interpret this. Do you think that it's them binding him to them, or do you think that it's Rand is dead and they're laying their hand on, saying their goodbyes. I kind of think
certainly
the former.
Certainly could be both. Is this one that we were sure they're talking about Rand? Because I think I remember reading about one of these in a forum, and somebody had thought that it could be somebody other than Rand. It could be Galad. That was the theory that this person in a forum I was reading said. Maybe that's a crazy theory that I... it's very possible that it could not be Rand.
It is, yeah. I don't see why, if it is Galad, I don't see why
Avianna
would be there.
Yeah, that's true. I guess she sort of would be out of place there, and so would Min. She doesn't even know him. So.
Right, exactly.
I think it was referencing Durand because there's so many dreams and viewings and things about the three women and Rand, either in a boat or something that makes it look like they're sitting while he's dead. That's, I always get that impression. There's quite a few of them.
The next one, this is for certain, and this is one I want to spend a little bit of time on. This is Egwene dreams this, and in one of the books, and I'm not exactly sure which one. Maybe you can correct me. But in The Knife of Dreams, she interprets it as the Shan Chan attacking the White Tower. The way that it reads is, atop a mountain sits a white plinth with plinth, which obviously is referencing the White Tower, with a glass oil lantern on top. That I'm not sure what is. And then the second part is, two ravens fly by and send the lamp tottering. Do you think it's foreshadowing of the Shan Chan actually attacking the White Tower?
You know, I don't
directly?
Know. They have, I think this is the way it happens. I'm not positive, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that she dreams the dream in Crossroads of Twilight, and she interprets the dream after she's been captured and brought forth to Elida. I think that's whenever she interprets it, which is in Knife of Dreams. Also, a little before that, she had a dream of herself falling. I can't remember exactly the way it goes, but she's fallen, and her and Nynaeve, I think, fell. And she has a Shan Chan person crawl down and help her up, which seems to be a little goofy if they're going to, you know, if a woman's going to help her up, the Shan Chan is going to help her. Then why would they attack the tower? I honestly don't know. It very well could be that Egwene, if she was brought before Elida, could just be making that entire interpretation up. Yeah, we're going to, I'm going to scare you, Elida, because this is my tower.
Yeah.
And that seems to be all she's focusing on.
I think she interpreted it after she had the dream, actually, but they just kept bringing it up in Knife of Dreams. I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get people... letting us know, but I think she had the dream and she actually woke up and said, this is the first time I can actually interpret the dream or something, or I think she says something along those lines in the book. I can't.
Yeah, that could be it.
I think so, but they kept bringing it back up in Knife of Dreams, but it's kind of weird because it says that the two she thinks it as the ravens, Shan Chan attacking, but it says two ravens fly by and set the lamp tottering. That doesn't mean that, it could just mean that the Shan Chan are the ones who provoke the actual attack between the rebels and the White Tower. It could just, I don't know.
That's true.
That's what I was thinking, you know. I mean, maybe they do attack the White Tower. Maybe they just go there for some other purpose, and because of Egwene's dreams, they think that they're attacking, and maybe it says it sets the lamp tottering, so it could be taken anyway.
Yeah, just from the Shan Chan's point of view, whenever we've heard from the Shan Chan, though, they don't think too highly of the White Tower, so really, I guess it's not that unlikely that they would think to attack it, because they obviously don't think too highly of women who can channel, and to hear that women who can channel are running the world over here probably doesn't... not something that they would support.
No, definitely not. But it could be somebody, what I was thinking was the poor girl, whose name I always forget, that's with Rand and Nynaeve and everybody, or possibly Tuon, if there's any way Matt could ever drag her there. I don't see him even wanting to go, but for some reason I see him back at the White Tower at some point. I don't know why, because I know that would be the last place he'd ever want to go. But for some reason, I could see him going back.
All right, moving along with the next one, we've got a, this is actually not a dream, this is a foretelling. It is done by Nicola Treehill. It's done in Lord of Chaos. And it goes like this. The lion's sword, the dedicated spear, she who sees beyond, three on the boat, and he who is dead yet lives. The great battle done, but the world not done with the battle. The land divided by the return, and the guardians balance the servants. The future teeters on the edge of a blade.
Well, I know that, yeah, the first part's pretty obvious. The lion, sword, Elaine, the dedicated spear, Avienda, she who sees beyond would be Min. Three on the boat, he who is dead yet lives, which kind of goes towards my other crazy theory again, where I don't think that he's actually dead.
Yeah,
Min's
it's also,
dead.
It could be referencing Luz Theron even, because he's dead, but he's living in Rand's head.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I just always have to think it my own.
I understand. Whatever you have a theory, you have to support it.
You know? Yeah, I have to keep pushing it.
Yeah, I think even the next part is pretty obvious. The land divided by the return, that's the Shan Chan that we were referencing earlier. The guardians, balance, the servants. This is something that I would like to point out. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the ancient language, doesn't Gaidin, which is the term for warder, mean guardian?
Yes, it does. I think so.
No, it's... Does it? I thought Ashaman was guardians.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Ashaman is guardians, and the servants would be the White Tower. I said I, so it would... I'm pretty sure the Ashaman balance...
Yeah, I got that wrong.
The White Tower. Yeah.
Which is what they're doing, because they're, you know, trading the amount of bonded Aes Sedai with bonded Ashaman. So, yeah, that makes even more sense.
But I think that's... I remember in Lord of Chaos when... because Dumani's Wilds is my favorite chapter,
yeah.
So... and I'm pretty sure that's where... When Rand says Ashaman...
Yeah, I think you're right.
They say it means guardians in
the
old tongue.
Yeah, and then he comes up with the different ranks, the dedicated and all that. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think I got that wrong. But, the land divided by the return, and then the guardians balance the servants, referencing the Shan Chan, and, if nothing else, the channelers...
Yeah. There's something that was in there, though, that we missed. The great battle done, but the world not done with battle. Or was it before that? The great... So, I think that means the last battle is over, but the world's not done with battle, is what I'm thinking that it means. So I'm thinking that this foretelling is telling what happens after the last battle. I think, is that...
Well, it's weird, because, it's talking about... It seems to be going in a bit of a chronological order. The lion, the dedicated spear, Min, Avienda, and Elaine, talking about them with Rand, and then it goes into the great battle done. It would seem a bit out of order if all of a sudden they started talking about the last battle and then went back to referencing the return of the Shan Chan and the exchanging of Ashaman and Aes Sedai bonding. I don't know what that would reference, though, the great battle done.
I think it means that the battle's over, but the land is still divided from the return, like, because Rand hasn't united the Shan Chan and the rest of the world. I think this is just my guess. And the guardians balance the servants, I think, means that they balance them in numbers by now. So by that time, the guardian, like the Ashaman, will balance the Aes Sedai. And then after, it says, the future teeters on the edge of a blade. So it's almost making it sound like the world isn't really that great even after the last battle, if it's won. Because if it still teeters on the edge of a blade, unless it's not referring to the last...
I think that's referring to their chances of survival, you know?
Afterwards, like the breaking?
Well,
and...
even the referencing their chance of success of winning the last battle, of winning Tarmogoyf, I think, you know, it could go either way, and described aptly with a blade, and
that
would be, you know, a very attack and warlike thing that it would balance on the end of. It would balance on a sword. The sword's going to decide it, so.
Here's what I think. Just hearing you two talking and thinking about it myself, maybe after the last battle is done, the land divided by the return and the guardians balance the servants. Maybe those two things are, even though the great battle's done, that maybe it means that there's still going to be wars going after that. Like there's going to be wars on the Shanchan dividing the land by them coming back. I mean, even though they defeated evil, that doesn't mean that they're not going to all, you know, skirmish amongst themselves as far as the Shanchan go. And then the guardians balance the servants. Maybe that's meaning also that the Black Tower and the White Tower eventually are going to be going into a war themselves also. And then, of course, I mean, that would follow by the future teeters on the edge of a blade, because even though the Dark One is imprisoned again, there's still the threat of war and the threat of all this violence still going on, even though he's gone.
It's true. I wish that I could say that the threat of, you know, or having lived through Tarmogoyden would be enough to put people at peace, but the threat of it looming has not stopped the Aes Sedai from being torn, which is
exactly
the stupidest thing in the world, stupid women. But sorry. But it's very possible that it could be skirmishes afterwards, and as we mentioned before, to support my own theory, that's where Loghain could come in and say, hey, we're getting along now. We're going to grow crops. Stop fighting.
Because look at what happened after the last time the Dark One was imprisoned. And they
true, the Time of Madness.
And they sealed the door.
Yeah.
I mean, the world was broken and people, the men were mad. Or not all men, but the channelers.
Yeah.
And people, it was just chaos everywhere. It took so long for... And then we went right... I'm thinking like I'm right there. Everybody went right back to where they were probably, you know, thousands of years before that time. They lost all their technology. Everything was gone. So who knows what could happen after this one, unless there is somebody or quite a few people. Hopefully a lot of the people will make it out. And these people, if they're strong enough leaders, they can maybe pull everybody together, and instead of having war and strife, they can kind of...
It sort of depends on how you view the prophecy. Is if you view the prophecy as that which happens before Tarmogoyden, or something that leads up to after Tarmogoyden. But it's very interesting.
So thanks, Ben. Thanks, Carrie. That actually about wraps it up for this week. Next week we'll return with our regular segments. I'm still continuing to read the books, so we're going to start talking about the books, specifically the next chapters of The Eye of the World. And Ben, of course, is going to have his crazy theories, and Carrie's going to have her listener feedback next week.
Yes, I think I actually have a really good crazy theory, so you definitely want to check it out. Also, we're going to be talking about The Forsaken. We're going to be doing episode 13, and there are 13 Forsaken. We're going to be talking about them, so if you have any thoughts on those evildoers, you should email us. The email address is podcast@dragonmount.com.
Yep, and everybody, you can also... send in some voicemail. You can ask a question or just give us feedback. We love to hear from you. The number is 888-333-7690. And also don't forget to visit our forums. It's at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
We're also going to be, Ben and I will be attending Dragon Con this year. We're still finalizing the schedule for when we'll be doing our live podcast. Which we'll be doing at the Wheel of Time track at Dragon Con. More information coming up on that. And that's it for this week. Everyone have a great week. Bye.
Bye.
Take care, everybody.
The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.